me, George G. We've got an awesome episode of the Aligned Money Show coming your way featuring Dan Ryan. Dan is a CFP and the managing partner with Sinceris Advisory. We had an awesome conversation that, of course, started with two truths and a lie and led into the necessity, importance, value of being a good steward of our attention, of our energy, and dealing with the massive influx of information that is constantly coming our way. So how do we focus on what's important and tune out the stuff that's not? How do we de-appify our lives and create firewalls around what is important to us? How do we find the headspace to be really clear in what our main objectives are, and how can we become fully invested in everything that we're doing, particularly when it comes to our finances, and how do we develop a thesis and test it, and all of these things. And we close with a great difference-making tip on how to successfully manage all the tech in our lives. I know you're going to love it. Let's go. Dan, to get us started, give me two truths and a lie, please.
Sure. By way of background, I've been a CFP for 15 years now. Prior to that, I think I peaked academically when I got a perfect score on the National Latin Exam. And then after that, I spent some time with my band touring, and we actually played in all 48 continental United States.
Amazing. So you've been a CFP for 15 years, you got a perfect score on the National Latin Exam, and you and your band have played in all 48 states here. Is that it?
That's it.
Okay. All right, Dan. These are excellent. Let's see here. You're very obviously a wonderful professional, so I certainly believe it's been 15 years. You're a really intelligent person, so I believe the Latin thing. I bet that you've not been to all 48 states with your band.
No, you're right. I can't even play the guitar well, so too much detail on that one, possibly.
Well, that's awesome. All right. So Latin, was it an open book test?
Yeah, I know. I wish. No, it was one of those I didn't expect to do well on, but somebody had to do it. So it was me, I guess.
Somebody got the perfect score. Okay. That's awesome. Well, that's certainly an impressive thing. Do you find value in having being comfortable with that language on a daily basis?
Sure. I mean, obviously, it's helpful for the root of things. I'd say it was most helpful when I started a firm and I had to name it. And I said, let's just pick something Latin. And that's how I ended up with Sinceris Advisory, which is obviously the root of honest, genuine, sincere. So that's probably the biggest value from my days in Latin.
Okay, good enough. And if you were to start a band and tour the continental United States, what instrument would you play? Or what role would you play in the band?
Like I said, I do play the guitar poorly. I have more guitars than skill at playing them. And my wife always reminds me, how many can you play at one time? The answer is still barely one. That would be my go-to weapon of choice.
Okay. I like it. All right, man. Well, what is top of mind for you right now?
Top of mind really been 0.5 so far, really, like, we find ourselves here maybe in an administration that is less about a consistent thesis and more about a need to occupy the conversation. And I think as investors and just as citizens, that is something that's difficult for us to grasp and to cope with. And I don't know about you, but I feel like my brain's on fire all the time. I feel like we're using these brains that were built for hunting and gathering, and now we're trying to process 10,000 bits of media information every day. That's constantly popping up on our phones, is constantly finding its way into our lives. And I'm really struggling with being able to do that and still make the decisions I need to make.
And that's not uncommon right there. I think we all feel like we're in a blender or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, that's the world. And I think one thing humans do really well is adapt, right? And I do think we're a bit of an inflection point where we're going to have to adapt a little bit to that.
Do you feel like that will come out of it just fine. It's just we're at this stage where the internet's relatively new, social media is new, and now all of a sudden we're all broadcasting news, for lack of a better term.
The optimist in me wants to truly believe that we'll be fine, but it's going to take work. And I'm hopeful that we're at a place where people are starting to see that. I think it's well documented that big corporations don't always have your best interest at heart. And they have their own objectives and news stories to get out there and get to you as much as possible. And so just taking being able to say, hey, like, no offense, mega corporation, but your product's not for me, and I'm going to turn it off.
Yeah. And just because you want me to look at something or click on something or subscribe to something or whatever doesn't mean that I'm going to do that. So when you say it takes work, it's being intentional about what I'm going to pay attention to, what I'm going to let in.
Yeah, I mean, I like to say a little bit of de-appification, but I'm an Apple user, and as soon as I install an app, it gets right into my notifications, right? And every time I pick up my phone, there's 30 to catch up on, and now Apple wants to summarize those to me, and distill them down so I can inject them right into my brain even quicker. And I just updated my OS on my MacBook, and now it wants to bring my phone notifications to my MacBook just to keep me constantly plugged in. And the point of being on my MacBook is I'm working. I put my phone down, and I'm supposed to be disconnected in that time. And I had an Apple Watch for a long time, and it was really, really unhealthy. It created this kind of symbiotic relationship where I was constantly checking it. And I've gone back to an old school watch, and it's one of the best things I ever did for myself.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of wisdom there. So de-appification, I think, is a great term. I wrote down create firewalls for ourselves and used to have that, right? You just got your work computer, but now all of a sudden they're trying to put whatever, everything on that computer too.
I think there was and it's frankly, there was headlines, a Disney employee got in trouble for basically getting malware, but it was his home computer, but that's also his work computer. And so having this delineation of these are my spaces and this is what I use them for, and being really mindful about that, I think is really important. And that goes to being an informed investor, being, that was the whole game, was I'm going to read these news sources, I'm going to make a thesis, I'm going to create it, instead of just constantly being processing everything and not having a diligent approach to it. I mean, it's called due diligence for a reason, and the diligence has gone out the window, and you're just always doing it.
That's interesting, right? It's kind of like the idea of if I'm an Olympic athlete, I spend 99% of my time training and 1% actually performing. But these days, we're just always performing and we're never actually training. We're not doing that diligence.
Yeah, and I do think the world around us has changed. Social media, politics, everything, it's so much more of an oral world than it was is a written world. And in the oral world, things can be said one day and change the next day. There's not the same record of it because people are constantly consuming. That means that you have to approach things with a higher degree of skepticism. It doesn't mean they're going to be beholden to it the next day or the next week.
That's really interesting. I was just doing a little bit of research this morning and discovered that from a student perspective, like I assume 7 through 12, the amount that kids are actually reading for pleasure is down by 50% just in the past 20 years. So it's aligned with what you just said.
Yeah, and I mean, my childhood reading were some of my happiest days. I remember discovering 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea by Jules Verne, and what a formative experience that was. And I don't think that the same experience is derived from a YouTube video when there's just another one lined up right after it.
So, I think it makes a lot of sense to be a good steward of what it is that you're consuming and who you're giving your resources to, your attention to, your energy, your time, your money to, in every aspect of our lives. From just to stay in our lane, from a personal financial standpoint, how do you think about, or how do you coach people to do that work to make sure that we're protecting our sanity and our resources?
Yeah. I've had a lot of meetings with people, and I'm having some today where it's just, let's keep this conversation contained. You know, I'm your advisor, and when we're sitting down, let's hash it out and let's create a thesis. Let's, you know, talk about what pieces of the policy we're going to actually worry about and which ones we're going to ignore. And then let's, you know, put that worry and stress in a box. And we've got an approach for it, and this is how we're going to handle it. Instead of letting it seep into your daily life, you know, the example I would say is, if you don't have time to read an article, don't read the headline, because that's going to be pinging around in your head for the rest of the day.
Which
And
is at,
that's the same approach to investing. If you don't have time for it, like, let's not make a rash decision about, well, let's change something in my portfolio, let's go to cash. When you don't have time to do all the research.
I think that is really wise. And I forget what it's called. I think it's residual attention. When you do read an email and you think that you're just going to pivot to doing something else, that's not how it works, because your brain is still processing what it is that you read. And so I love the idea. If you don't have time to read the whole article, don't read the headline, because it's going to be still taking up some of your bandwidth.
Yeah, and the reality is the headline's probably sensationalized, and the real facts are in the article. So you're operating at a disadvantage to begin with.
So when you say let's create a thesis, if you would walk me through just a theoretical example of what that kind of conversation looks like, if it's we're trying to save for retirement or some kind of an objective, or what, tell me, just kind of walk me through that.
Even people, a lot of these days, people are feeling like being particularly tactical with their portfolios. Like, let's be defensive, or let's, you know, tech's had a good run, let's scale some of that off. But one of the things we always tell clients is, that's fine if you're going to have an initial exit point, but you have to have the final, you know, if this occurs, this is what I'm going to do. And if this doesn't occur, if my thesis is wrong, like, you know, I think the market's going to pull back 20%. If it doesn't pull back 20% in the next 6 months, well, then I've got to get back in. I've solved what I'm going to do now and what I'm going to do later. And I'm going to test myself. We've created metrics. You know, I think this is going to happen, and it's fine to be wrong about it. But you have to have that point of where you can say, "Hey, my thesis did not come to fruition, and I can go back."
So
Because
had.
I think that's what being a good investor and being a good human's about, is being able to admit when you were wrong.
And so in advance, you set the time limit or whatever it might be. And so when the time comes, you're not having to make an emotional or any kind of a decision. It's just, we agreed that we're going to sell or buy or whatever it might be.
Yeah, people wanted to dollar cost average. That obviously didn't work last year or the year before. But if you stuck to your timeline, you still got it done, and you're still in a much better place today than if you'd sat on cash waiting for the pullback.
Yeah.
And so even having that discipline around it, still results in good outcomes.
So it's setting expectations for yourself. And in this example, you as an advisor are helping your clients to set appropriate expectations.
Sure.
Okay. I love it.
Exactly.
Talked about, well, I talked about de-appifying, talked a little bit about firewalls, protecting. I read this, or I saw this little clip from Roger Federer at a commencement address talking about how over the course of his career, he won 84% of his matches, but only won 54% of the points. So the most important thing is to focus on the point. But once it's over, you have to be able to focus on the next thing. And it strikes me that there's probably through lines, because I believe that you're a chess player and that you're involved with that, of you need to be focused on the move, but then potentially looking at other moves. Do you see correlations between the world of investing and what we're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as you know, like in a chess match, you might make a blunder, and that comes with a huge emotional component. You frequently want to resign right there, but so many matches have been won after blunders, maybe by better players than me, but I've still gotten lucky sometimes too. You know, if you go back and you look at the whole match, both sides made multiple blunders or errors at least, and so. being able to say, hey, I am human and I've erred, but I'm going to keep pressing on again because we're resilient and adaptive. And that's what investing is about. I've gotten 51% of the calls right in my career, but that means I'm still here. And a lot of it is just being fully invested and being in low costs and controlling the things that you can control. But also knowing that like you've got to give yourself some grace sometimes because sometimes it's emotional. It's your money. You worked very hard for it. Sometimes you're going to make decisions. As long as you can make better ones in the future, that's the name of the game.
That is the name of the game. Being fully invested. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, the market's up generally. Three out of 4 years, it's up, and over the long run. And so, if we were all robots, we would just put it in every day. We're not. But that should be our objective over the long run is to be a participant in markets. The market premium is there. A lot of the times, that's what we're managing, though, is like, hey, this is your money. Maybe you got a lump sum. What are your goals? Let's make sure those are funded, and then let's get the rest to work, and setting those expectations.
Yeah. Being fully invested. And that's, I'm probably way too reductive with things and see through lines to too many things. But I mean, whatever it is that you're doing, be invested in it. We're here to have a conversation about our finances. Let's be fully invested with everything that we have. And then when we're done with it, then we can move on to something else.
Yeah, and it's funny. I've drawn this analogy before, but like, at robo advisors, we're going to come and take all our jobs. And so many, young professionals in tech started using a robo advisor, and that was great, and it got them fully invested, and it accomplished all the goals, and then the money started to become meaningful, and the life goals started to be meaningful, and there's a family and kids, and that started to create the separation. And I use the analogy of a bear market, but like, if you're in a bear market, the robo advice is going to be stay invested, don't go to cash. But if a robot's telling you to do that or an AI is telling you to do that, you might be a little bit more skeptical than if a human's telling you to do it and saying, this is also what I'm doing. I'm going to lay down and play dead. And I've got the same delusions as you. Maybe the robot or AI doesn't. There's some through lines there of like, we're all in this experience together, and this is real advice.
So you're not worried about artificial intelligence taking your job?
Again, maybe it's the recency bias of having just been through it with robos, but yeah, I'm not, not yet, at least.
Yeah. Well, time will tell. It usually does. So what do you see? And this is a kind of a just sort of a big question. What are some things, a thing that people either overlook or they get wrong pretty consistently, that if we could make a change, would have a pretty big difference?
Yeah, I talk about the biases a lot, and knowing your own biases, and we all have the same ones. We're all human, and so this kind of confirmation bias, again, the type of news you're consuming tends to be similar. And saying, "Hey, look, I've gotten all my advice from Reddit over the past 6 months. Maybe I've put myself in a bubble." And saying I need to step out of that. There's ways to, explore your own biases and step out of them. Because if you're in that bubble, when eventually that dart hits the board in the right spot and you're gonna have a tremendous overconfidence. I knew this was coming. All my news sources predicted this instead of saying, hey, nobody was certain of anything for a long time. And so I do think that confirmation bias is a huge one. I think it fuels everything. It fuels the other biases. It fuels overconfidence. It fuels recency. And so just really auditing yourself is a big one.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Well, Dan, you've given us a lot, but we're ready for that difference-making tip. What do you have for us?
Yeah, I'm gonna keep it simple, because I'm a millennial. I'm an elder millennial, and I thought I was tech savvy once, but I'm finding it's slipping. It's getting harder. And if I said to my boomer parents, "Go disable the notifications in your phone," they wouldn't know where to begin. And so familiarizing yourself with how this gets into your world, and how I can just easily turn something off, knowing how your devices work, because we're all busy and it's so easy to say, like, I don't even have time to figure out where the setting is to, I installed a new app because it made me, I wanted to read one article, it made me install a new app. Now I'm getting notifications every day for life. And just knowing the control you have, because the more you do it, the easier it becomes and the more time saving it is. And that is just has a cumulative effect. That 5 seconds spent disabling something accumulates into hundreds and thousands of seconds in your year that you've got back.
Well, I think that that is great stuff that definitely gets, come on. Isn't that the truth? And an ounce of cure is worth a pound. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure on that deal. So
Yeah.
do the work on the front end to just understand how these devices that we work with on a daily basis are robbing us of so many different things. So I think that that's great. Well, Dan, thanks so much for coming back on the show. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage?
Thanks, George. I'm simple. I'm at Sinceris Advisory. You could Google us, but Sinceris ADV, that's SinceriusADV.com. We have a blog, Planning to Wealth, planningtowealth.com. You can probably find us there, writing as much as we can.
Love it. Well, if you enjoyed as much as I did, show Dan your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to sincerusadv.com, SinceriusADV.com. Check out all the great resources. Check out the Planning to Wealth blog as well, which I know you can access through the site. And get in touch with Dan. Thanks again, Dan.
Thanks, George. Appreciate it.
Finally, friendly reminder, never going to be anybody more interested in your financial success than you are. So act accordingly.